What goes on behind the scenes in Pacific politics and how does it affect us? Each week, Politalk dives straight into the tough questions. Like what happens if a World War II shipwreck ruptures and unleashes thousands of liters of oil into our ocean?
Across the Pacific, there's around 3,800 of these World War II shipwrecks which are potentially polluting.
To listen, search Politalk in your favourite podcast app.
This is an ABC podcast.
Hello, I'm Evan Wasuka, and welcome to Pacific Review, where we'll be taking a look at the top stories from across the Pacific region over the past week. Coming up on today's show, Samoa is cracking down on illegal drugs, with government planning mandatory drug tests for public servants. The town of Leeton in New South Wales is pitching itself as a model for dealing with disengaged Pacific workers. And local political rivalries delaying Samoa signing up to a new Australia-Pacific rugby deal. We'll have more on those stories coming up. Pacific Review comes to you from the lands of the Boonwurrung and Wurundjeri peoples of the Kulin Nation. We start in Vanuatu, where people on the island of Ambai have been experiencing what authorities are calling low-level volcanic eruptions. For the past week, sulfur and ash has been erupting from an active volcano, prompting Vanuatu's geohazard department to issue a 2-kilometer no-go zone around the crater. The last major eruption was in 2017 and 2018, which led to the evacuation of more than 10,000 people. Chief Jackson Ikipas recently visited Ambai and says ashfall is damaging food gardens and water sources.
There were like 2 centimeters of ash falling, likely breaking all the branches of bananas and I would say cassava. And so the food crops are struggling now. So from the east up to the center, they are sort of facing difficulties with sort of spinach or vegetation or vegetables. It's a high concern, so we need to monitor them very carefully. Otherwise, these people have to evacuate again if this activity keeps going for another few more days.
That was Chief Jackson Ikipas speaking there about the volcanic eruption on Ambai Island in Vanuatu. The New South Wales town of Leeton is fast becoming a well-known destination for Pacific seasonal workers, especially those disengaged from the Pacific Australia Labour Mobility Scheme and are seeking help. As the ABC's Lucy Cooper reports, the town could provide a model for other regional centres.
Towns across regional and rural Australia are grappling with disengaged workers, labourers who have left companies they were recruited to work for under the Pacific Australia Labour Mobility PALM scheme. Their visas are tied to their employer, so if they leave their job, their visas can be revoked. Since 2019, more than 7,000 workers have disengaged from the scheme. Many remain in Australia on bridging visas or are undocumented.
The government has largely left these workers, these people who've left the PALM scheme, who are in these really vulnerable and precarious situations. The government's completely ignored it.
Kaya Barry, an academic with Griffith University, recently co-authored a report looking into their situation.
We know that there's thousands of people out there who need support, but you know, once they're formally exited from the PALM scheme visa, it's like everybody turns a blind eye.
But there is one town wanting to change this.
You might see as you drive in, we have a sign, don't we, saying we welcome immigrants and refugees and new settlers. So they know we've got to open arms.
That's George Weston. He's the mayor of Leeton Shire Council.
We've got a great heart. We have a multiculturalism organisation who go out of the way. They take them to the hospital. They look after them. They help them with filling out forms at our local library to try and get their visas organised, try and give them as much information as possible.
Home to about 9,000 people, Leeton is about 6 hours from Sydney. It's located in the Riverina region, known as the Food Bowl of New South Wales, a crucial agricultural region putting food on the plates of millions of Australians.
We can help them. We can look after them. We can use them. And Australia can use them as well.
Leeton Shire Council is a founding member of the Mayoral Alliance for the Pacific, which aims for better outcomes for palm scheme workers and the communities they work in.
We're trying to lobby the federal government. There's DFAT and Dwyer and Home Affairs, because they're all just different silos, and we're trying to get them together and say, hey, we've got a problem here. These people are worthy people, or they've been disengaged, but how about we get them back into the workplace? You know, can you reevaluate and look at this?
Most of the disengaged workers in Leeton have moved there through word of mouth. Seeking connection and support, Leeton welcomes them with open arms.
It makes me really proud of Leeton, the welcoming that we do. Every individual here go out the way to help people. It makes you feel really great.
At JBS Riverina, a beef feedlot, farm and processing facility, palm scheme workers are a crucial part of the workforce. Inorke Knox, Colony Singer, works at JBS as the palm support and engagement officer.
We believe in the workers' welfare being paramount and very important to our production as well. If the workers are looked after well outside of work, it will show on the numbers at work as well.
From Fiji and Samoa, Knox said his background helps him understand the workers better.
I know their backgrounds because I was from there and I live here as well. So if there's anyone that could help integrate them into the Australian community, there would be someone like me. Someone who lives in both worlds.
Paul Matem hopes these roles and ideas which Leeton is trying to implement will become a model for the rest of the country.
We should never, ever, ever have that a person is fearful of their job.
And that was Paul Matem, and he was the former mayor of Leeton. He now leads the town's multicultural support group. He ends that report from the ABC's Lucy Cooper. Samoa's new government is embarking on a major administration-wide crackdown on illicit drugs, which includes testing public servants. Prime Minister Laulia Malietoa Polaitavaofosi says tackling the drug problem is now one of his government's top priorities. The ABC Samoa reporter Adolf Ruin reports from the capital, Apia. The cabinet has officially approved a new directive under the PSC. Every government employee will be required to take a drug test.
That's Samoa's Prime Minister Laulil Malietor announcing drug tests for public servants during his weekly press conference. Like the rest of the community, Samoa's public service has been affected by the deluge of methamphetamines making its way into the country in recent years. And on the streets of Apia, there's support for bureaucrats to be drug tested.
I believe the government has done the right thing to pass a directive to drug test the public servants.
That's good. It's something that needs to be done, but I believe that it should start from the top with our leaders, the members of Samoa's parliament.
The Prime Minister says drugs are now everywhere, even schools.
I have noticed from some reports brought before me that the drugs issue has spread into schools. There are also secondary schools in the A'a'ana district extending to other schools where there was a recent commotion. The matter has now spread throughout the country.
He says the government wants to involve local mayors to come up with rules and regulations to try and tackle the problem from within villages. Drug tests are already underway in the police force. Acting Commissioner Leata Wasamwilu Afamusanga says the whole police executive has been tested.
At the moment, the policy for police drug testing has not yet been fully implemented. What is clear is that the former commissioner had started this process and we, the Samoa police executive, have already undergone testing.
Leatawa says that they are reviewing their policies to address the situation where an officer tests positive.
I don't know yet the full results at this time, but we are reviewing our policy, which was drafted under the former commissioner. According to the law, there is no provision about what action to take if a police officer or any person to be tested, whether the result is positive or negative.
And that was Samoa's acting police commissioner, Leietawa Samuelu Afamusanga, ending that report from Adele Fruin in Samoa's capital, Apia. Between November and December every year, thousands of Australian high schoolers travel to holiday destinations to mark the end of their secondary school career. Known as schoolies, it's considered a rite of passage for Australian kids, with the Gold Coast in Queensland a favourite destination. Now, Fiji and Vanuatu are also putting up their hands, and they're pitching a different experience that may appeal more to anxious parents. The ABC's Finau Fonua with this report.
Ask any young Australian what they'll do at the end of their high school era, and schoolies is a common response. This unique Australian tradition gives school leavers a chance to let their hair down. Queensland's Gold Coast is the usual destination for schoolies, with over 15,000 travelling there last year alone. But Pacific countries are also getting in on the act. Fiji is the most popular destination in the Pacific region for schoolies. There aren't official numbers on the number of schoolies visiting Fiji, but according to the Sydney Morning Herald, over 2,000 graduates visited Fiji in 2011.
It's a closer, more safer destination.
Christopher Cocker is the CEO of the South Pacific Tourism Organization. He welcomes schoolies, saying it opens up a new market, different from the usual target demographic of families and couples.
It's a great opportunity for our Pacific Islands because it's a niche, and we do encourage niche segments, etc., to come over.
Many schoolies are organized by students under the guidance of their teachers. They typically travel to tourism hotspots. It's an emotional event for the young Australians as they bid farewell to each other before embarking on their separate journeys into adulthood.
So one of my other friends, she was dancing with these two guys.
However, schoolies are also notorious for wild parties and underage drinking, with videos of wild antics often going viral on social media. But Pacific tourism operators say the schoolies' experience in Fiji and Vanuatu is something anxious parents might be happier with than other destinations.
Despite it being slightly higher for the average parent to send their child for a holiday in Fiji, it is deemed far safer than if they were to go to, let's say, the Gold Coast.
Fantasia Lockington, CEO of the Fiji Hotels and Tourism Association, says that Fiji offers special packages that book out entire resort islands that are kept alcohol-free and with extra security.
There's a lot of preparation that gets taken by the resorts that are what we call bought out. So it is just only dealing with schoolies and the teachers or support staff that come with them, and even parents. No one else is allowed on the island or into the resort. They use extra security. And so the young people who are enjoying the holiday ensure that they are, you know, extremely safe. No one else has access to them. There are no nightclubs that one could escape to.
Kylie Hogan, general manager of the Blue Lagoon Beach Resort, says Fijian resorts offer an escape from the noise and bright lights of Bali and the Gold Coast.
You know, they've got the option to disconnect from the real world as they know it, and they'll just go carefree for the entire stay. They feel really super comfortable and secure in amongst the environment and all of the team. And it very much is almost similar to village parenting, where it's a sense of family and it's a sense of security and it's a sense of fun and absolute just joy everywhere you turn.
Vanuatu is another country in the Pacific which has received positive reviews by schoolies on social media.
Vanuatu benefits enormously from Australian tourism.
Miranda Hodge, owner of the Havana Boathouse in Port Vila, says the growing Australian market is vital to the country's economy. Hodge says Vanuatu's ambitions to become a top-tier tourism destination has been maintained by its authenticity. Tourism experts say the friendliness and simplicity of a Pacific Island holiday is what keeps bringing visitors back to the region.
It's not only looking at tourism as an economic benefit to our people in the region, but looking at it from a social perspective.
The Fijians are genuinely so warm and big-hearted that they welcome anyone and everyone into their islands with open arms.
And that story from the ABC's Finau Fonua. Residents of the Pacific's largest capital city, Port Moresby in Papua New Guinea, say crippling water cuts are disrupting lives at home and at work. Authorities are blaming aging infrastructure and water theft for losing half of the city's water supply even before it reaches customers. And with Christmas just around the corner, residents are worried that many homes will be without water this festive season. The ABC's Belinda Cora takes a look at PNG's water woes.
The taps are slowly running dry in PNG's capital city, while feelings of frustration are growing among the city's 430,000 residents. Constance Maso lives in what's considered a prime location in Port Moresby.
We had to use water from their standby tanks, and then that finished, and then the property owner was unable to fill it up because of the low supply that was coming from Water PNG. And then they had to opt for the water cart back to come and refill the tanks.
Jeanette Maip is a homemaker, but her home, like many others in the capital, has been without water in recent months. She's relying on her neighbors to access water. Jeanette had to spend money on buying containers to store water for her family.
Buckets, like containers worth of 150, 200 kina, just to put around the house for us to store our water. Even like when water comes back, we'll store our water inside the big containers. Like mine, I have a big container that I spend 150 kina to pay for that container just to put refill water and then use it to cook and wash and, you know, toilet.
Wonu Libitino says it has been a challenging couple of months with poor service. She has not been able to have a proper shower and wants to know why.
We have to fill up buckets, even when it's a low, you know, low pressure. We have to fill up buckets and have, you know, use a pail to have a shower. And that's, I just don't like that. I'd rather have a full, refreshing shower before I start my day or at the end of the day. And I expect Water PNG, like, we're not in the village, come on. And that's really frustrating, not knowing anything, not knowing if they're carrying out rationing. So if they could provide some kind of update or notice on their Facebook page, that would be really helpful.
John Damien lives in Baroko area and is a father of three. He says the poor water supply is affecting his whole family.
For the past 2 weeks, we've been without water, no water, none. The tap has been dry for 2 weeks. And just on Monday, we started receiving water at 8 o'clock in the morning. And then it goes off at 12 o'clock. And then it comes back on at 6 o'clock in the evening.
So what is causing all these problems for Port Moresby residents? It's the question I put to Water PNG, the body responsible for supplying water to the capital. James Young is the head of Water PNG, and he took me to the Bomana Pumping Station and Mount Eriama Treatment Site, two key sites for the city's water supply, to help answer the question.
Much of the infrastructure was built in the 1960s, and actually one of the sites you saw today, the Bomana Pumping Station, was built in 1943. So you can imagine that the population of Port Moresby in those years was only a fraction of what it is today. So we're still squeezing every last drop of water out of that old infrastructure.
The aging infrastructure is only one of the problems faced by Water PNG. Mr. Young says theft of water is another issue, compounding the city's already poor water supply.
Around about 50% of the treated water that goes into our networks is actually lost through a few factors, one of them being water theft. We have quite a high amount of sabotage of our network and water theft. Which zone? But even commercial customers sometimes have got illegal connections into our network that take quite a bit of water. And that impacts our ability to ration water. It's why we're a little bit unpredictable. There's no modern SCADA systems or automation that a modern utility might have. So it's all done manually. So staff literally run valves, turn valves off and on in a 24/7 manner.
And that was the CEO of Water PNG, James Young, ending that report from the ABC's reporter in Port Moresby, Belinda Cora. A $150 million rugby union funding proposal is being considered by Pacific countries. While Fiji and Tonga have already signed off on the deal, Samoa is holding out. And the suggestion is that the Prime Minister, Laauli Maliete Polaita Fosi Schmid, wants a shake-up of Samoa's rugby board. This would include removing the chairman and his arch-political rival, Tuilaepa Sailele Malie Lengangoe. So now, the chief executive of Tonga Rugby is urging the two men to put their political differences aside for the good of all three Pacific nations. Richard Ewart with more.
Money is in short supply at the Tongan Rugby Union, so the prospect of sharing in $150 million from Canberra is an exciting one for the TRU's CEO, Aisia Aholele.
Pretty much over the moon that the Australian government is considering giving the green light to the proposal for us, Fiji and Samoa, to be part of bigger competitions, especially in Australia. The Moana Pasifika pathway isn't really going to plan, and this is sort of a backup plan for us that will help us tremendously with giving our players better competition to grow their game. For us, it's a godsend.
What the new money would do is pave the way for Tonga, Fiji and Samoa to enter teams into Super Rugby Oz. That's the third tier competition, which kicked off for the first time this year with development teams from the four Australian Super Rugby Pacific franchises involved to begin with. Tonga and Samoa in particular are enthusiastic about the idea because they believe not enough of their young players are getting a chance at Moana Pacifica. Lakapi Samoa's chief executive, Douglas Nau Chun, is hopeful, as is his opposite number in Tonga, that money from World Rugby that has been going to Moana will be funneled back to them now.
We have fundings lining up, and we're in talks now with the Australian Rugby Union, World Rugby, in securing those funds.
That said, therefore, what would be the nature of a Samoan side that would compete in Super Rugby Oz?
Definitely, there will be the development teams. It allows us the opportunity to bring the expertise from Australia and build the pathways for our locals here and keep our players on island.
I just got told that World Rugby probably won't be funding Moana Pasifika, but questions were put to World Rugby whether that money will come to Samoa and Tonga. When and how much, we don't really know, but they said that it will come back to our unions.
Whatever happens to that money is not dependent upon politicians' signatures, but the money being offered by Australia is very much a government-to-government matter. As far as sealing this deal is concerned, my understanding is that Fiji and Tonga, their respective governments have signed off, but that's not the case in Samoa. I don't know whether you're in a position to tell me why or not, because I gather it could be quite sensitive.
Well, we're meeting the Prime Minister, and we'll have a sit down with him, and he already gave his full support. It's just us getting his signature that we're after.
I believe we may be at risk here of sport and politics colliding. Would that be right?
I can't comment on that. We want to make sure that we can secure this funding from Australian government and work closely with Australian Rugby Union in implementing what we propose.
But the word on the grapevine is that Prime Minister Laauli has effectively frozen funding for Lakapi Samoa in an effort to remove all politicians from the union's board, but in particular the chairman, his political rival, Tuilaepa, who has occupied that post for decades. But as he indicated to local journalists during Manu Samoa's bumpy qualifying ride to the 2027 World Cup, standing down is not on the opposition leader's agenda.
Will we be seeing any changes along the board? Will they be stepping down in the future?
Of what?
From the board?
Will that improve the play? That is a very stupid question. I am not playing there. What is important is the money that must be provided, and we haven't got enough money. That comes from the government.
Aisia Aholele, for one, will be praying that Lakapi Samoa can persuade their Prime Minister to put pen to paper.
You hear stories just like yourself about what's happening in Samoa, but what I know is that rugby is in everybody's hearts in Samoa. I think it's just them to sort out their connections and who will guide their union through this program and this gift.
But also, I think, political rivalry, and my understanding is that maybe what's holding things up here, that the new Prime Minister essentially wants the old Prime Minister off the board.
Yeah, I think a bit of politics here as well. Doesn't help, but I'm sure they can put aside their political rivalry for the best of the country.
However, were Laauli to succeed in his apparent mission to remove Tuilaepa, it's likely there would be a collective sigh of relief at Lakapi Samoa. More than once during the Manu's difficult journey to the next World Cup, the chairman threatened to sack coaches and officials he blamed for the team's struggles. And CEO Douglas Nau Chun was very much in the firing line.
If Belgium have overcome us in Dubai, probably you'll be talking to a new CEO now. That match was very important to us because it determines the future of our rugby on Ireland. We were tasked by the board to deliver. Luckily, we did in the end. So now we have another opportunity as a team to sit down, plan, and make sure we take the lessons learned from this year's performance.
And that task will be made easier if Lockerbie Samoa can lay their hands on the Australian government money that is on the table, and their neighbours in Tonga and Fiji will be very grateful too. But right now, it would appear the matter rests in the hands of just one man.
And that was the ABC's Richard Ewart reporting. And that brings us to the end of Pacific Review for this week. I'm Evan Wasuka. Thank you for listening, and do join us again at the same time next week for more news and views from across the Pacific.